Well, guys, I'm not too sure if I should be trying this with y'all.
Don't worry, Timmy. My dad buys nostalgia every week. He won't even notice it's gone.
Come on, Timmy. You want to be cool, don't you?
I guess I do, but it's just...
Let's just walk over to the trees. You can decide over there.
Oh, this peer pressure is really kicking my ass.
Timmy, don't be a puss.
All right, you ready to take one? Here we go. The Goonies.
I'm tripping so hard.
All right, Timmy, it's your turn.
Your turn, Timmy. I bet you can't even take it.
Hey, yeah, you little Timmy.
Little itty-bitty Timmy Gunderson.
Timmy Gunderson.
Hanging out all by himself.
Timmy Gunderson.
Well, I can gun this down.
Wait, no, don't take them all.
Timmy, you're not supposed to take the whole bottle.
I don't feel so good.
What do we do? What do we do?
Leave them. Let's get the hell out of here.
I think we should take them to the hospital, man.
Yeah, I'm here for an appointment for Mr. Petey.
Yes, go ahead and sit over there at the waiting chairs.
All right, if I can. Hey, you got a little problem with your old sphincter there, youngster?
How did you know?
I know a raw dog walk when I see one. Let me just, slip you something that's helped me in my years.
Well, what's this?
That's lube, honey. As good as they come. Or more like, as you come, if you know what I mean.
Lube.
Timmy, listen to me. It's very important that you listen to me, Timmy. I am your doctor, your medical doctor. You've ingested a large quantity of the drug nostalgia. You are experiencing someone else's memories. It's very important that you find who you are, grasp, remember who you were as Timmy. Remember, Timmy.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, 1997 is such a good time to be alive.
Oh, yeah, guten Morgen.
Oh, yeah, Pete, you're a good dancer.
Thanks, I know a couple of slidey moves.
What is that you are doing there, Petey?
I call this the electric slip and slide. Whee!
Oh, my God.
So slippery.
Oh, yeah, you guys like this? Well, check this out. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Franz, I love these naked lubed up dance parties, yeah.
I'm so happy we invited our friend Dale Petey, Mr. Lube Man himself.
Yeah.
Lube Man, that's got a ring to it for sure.
Petey, do the thing with the helicopter.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Look at that ballpark Frank.
So American.
So American.
Ah! Ah, no, I'm stuck. This is just like that movie. I think I'm gonna be here for at least 120 hours, give or take maybe 7 more, depending on if I get convinced to cut off my arm.
Don't worry, Mr. Springbreakers. I'm here to help.
Who are you, Mr. Gray Morph Suit Man? You look very odd.
You look like you're in the wrong movie. But that's okay. I'm gonna get this freak geeking out of here.
What are you talking about?
Just let me give you a big hug.
Why are you pouring this on my... This is not gonna help... Oh... Oh, why is that such a nice tingling sensation?
Looby dooby doo!
My arm is free. How did you do that?
With the magic of fire and ice. KY Jelly.
You saved my life. Who are you?
I'm Lube Man. I'm Timmy. Lube Man? Timmy.
Timmy. Timmy. Wake up, Timmy. Your name is Timmy Gunderson. You're 12 years old.
Looby dooby doo?
You're awake, Timmy. Can you hear me?
How did I slip into this one?
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Gunderson, I told you there might be issues. When he took this much nostalgia, the memories of this random person, it appears to be Lube Man, were implanted onto his. He might never truly regain his own memories.
You guys want to see the electric slip and slide? It's all the rage of 97.
Timmy, just stop. Where is my little boy?
Who taught him the electric slip and slide? Did you find my secret box of VHSs, Timmy?
What secret box of VHSs?
It's not like you don't have your fair share of pornography under the bed too, Darla.
I don't, actually.
Oh, like your romance novels aren't full of getting dicked down by muscular German men at discotheques.
That has nothing to do with what we're
talking
about.
Don't listen to your parents, Timmy. Look at me. I'm your medical doctor speaking to you directly. Remember who you are, Timmy. Come back to us. Come back to Timmy Gunderson. Your name is Timmy Gunderson. Timmy, I need you to tell me, what is your name?
I'm Lube Man! Lubey Jubey Jam!
No, Timmy, come back! I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Gunderson. Your son has slipped away.
And we're sliding in for another episode of Son of a Ginger. As always, I'm your host, Patrick Baylor.
I'm your host, Beth Marcinko.
And I'm Mason Big Blue Omnipotent Dick Moreau.
With our very special guest today.
Hi, I'm Alex.
And if you couldn't gather from our lube-tastic cold open there, we're talking Watchmen, the series on HBO.
Very, I wouldn't say controversial series, but a lot of questions were raised as to how authentic this would be to the source material. The writer of the original comic, Alan Moore, certainly denounced the adaptation, but as we come to find out, Dave Gibbons, the artist for the original comic, was a story consultant on this show as well. But, you know, it was weird. HBO bought the rights to Watchmen and it kind of sat in limbo and everyone was like, what's going to come out of this? And I think we got a masterpiece of a show.
This is my favorite TV show of the year. Like, easily. Like, I don't know what else the heck I liked, but at least with dramas, this was fun, man. With Watchmen, I don't know. I, like, finally got to watch it, I think, maybe around this time last year. Like, I finally watched it recently. But it was always something that, like, it's an intimidating piece because of the lore, and it's, like, I don't know, it's such a comic, you know what I mean? It hits different than, you know, your Supermans or your Iron Mans or whatever. It's a graphic novel.
It's heavy. It deals with heavy themes. They print it on every book. Every Watchmen issue, if you just buy the standard graphic novel, will say part of Time Magazine's 100 best novels. So let me just start by saying the book, Watchmen, is my Star Wars.
And your Harry Potter.
Sort of like my Harry Potter as well.
Your Nancy Drew?
I really liked Harry Potter, though. I'd say Harry Potter is my Harry Potter. Watchmen was this thing that I picked up in eighth grade because the librarian at my middle school heard someone talking about it, and she was like, that's a great book. And I'm not talking about comics, I'm talking about books. Then I picked it up, and in eighth grade, I read through it, and it, like, blew my little 14-year-old mind.
So this is why I'm very excited about this episode, because we have an OG fan, and we have a employee of the program in our guest, Alex Olhausen.
I had the immense pleasure of working on the show for four episodes, the last four, and
so the really cool ones.
Oh, absolutely.
The tie-ins where it all tied in together.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it was so crazy and fascinating and amazing.
I think we tempt fate like too much in this house. You know what I mean? Like the fact that this book was such like a seminal piece of literature to me, I end up getting a Dr. Manhattan tattoo, and then my roommate Alex walks by like a few weeks later and he's like, oh, by the way, I just got the job on Watchmen.
Like, what
is going on? Like, how is this? It's just crazy how this thing that influenced me so much ended up re-entering my life in such a meaningful way.
It's like Dr. Manhattan does.
Jesus, Beth, you just blew my mind. Like Dr. Manhattan does in the show.
This moment you're also thinking when you got the tattoo, and then you're also thinking when Alex told you he was working on it, and then also you're reading the novel for the first time.
And you're also watching the movie in theaters and thinking, wow.
And we had a super size of a series. We had 9 episodes instead of like maybe 8. And I don't know, what was different about this is, you know, Mason, you can probably extrapolate on this more, but this originally didn't center on the like OG Watchmen characters. You know, we're introduced to Angela Abar, played by the wonderful Regina King. If you're on The Leftovers, I stan you, and she's a leftover from The Leftovers, along with Damon. So she was like the centerpiece of this. She's just a masked cop that's been through some shit, and then all this just, I don't know, unweaves in a very well-done way. It's hard to describe, man.
What I would call it that makes it very similar to the comic tonally is like an absurdist drama.
Yeah, like it's not hammed up. It's just the right kind of thematics to where it's like, I'm watching a fun TV show. You know, I don't know. It's not too realistic.
I guess the way I would frame it would be it just feels like you're watching a world where the unreasonable can happen and the unexpected can happen. And you have these super beings and these people who are, you know, unreasonably intelligent and have all of these incredible gadgets and ideas. And this world really melds all of these unexpected things in a very cohesive way.
Yeah. So like, and I guess it's like kind of set up in the comic and, you know, in the movie, if any of our listeners are familiar with either of those. And it's all, you know, things that we're like kind of familiar about of this crazy world. So what I guess, yeah, I appreciated with this being a TV show instead of it being a rehash of those things that we've kind of already consumed, that we get something newer where all these characters that we know and love affect Angela Abar.
And I will confess my ignorance now rather than later. I have not seen the movie. I have not read the graphic novel. I have no context for the material that I watched in this television show other than Mason and Alex. But I still really enjoyed watching this show unfold. It was just very helpful to have some of that background as we were going along. Like in the first episode, when you see the squid showers, I would have been so completely lost had I not had people around me who knew the source material and were able to kind of explain that context. But I also felt like I could have enjoyed the fullness of the show if I didn't have that context and was able to make it through all 9 episodes.
Yeah, they don't dumb it down for you, but to make it digestible for someone, yeah, that is just watching this for the first time. Totally agree.
So I've shared my background with Watchmen. Beth has now shared hers. Alex and Patrick, you guys, give the listeners a little bit of insight behind what you knew about Watchmen going into either working on it or viewing it as a consumer.
So as like, I guess, in the middle of the spectrum of the Son of a Ginger hosts, I had only watched the movie. And yeah, it was fairly recent. And man, I don't know. It's like finally just like opening like a little treasure chest. And it's like, oh, what's this? I haven't seen this before, you know? And that's the best way to describe it for brevity's sake. I'm more intrigued to hear what Alex's perspective is.
So for me, obviously, I was not alive quite yet when the graphic novel first came out. Growing up, I wasn't really ever introduced to the material. When the movie had come out, I didn't see it. It wasn't on my radar. Well, lo and behold, I personally am a massive Damon Lindelof fan. I love all of his work, specifically in television.
Leftovers, baby!
And Lost as well.
That too, yeah.
And so I found out that he was making this series for television, for HBO. And so that got me immensely interested in the source material. And so I went to the bookstore and I saw a copy of Watchmen on the shelf. And I saw Damon Lindelof even has a quote on the cover of Watchmen graphic novel for mass distribution, where he calls the original graphic novel the greatest piece of popular fiction ever created. So, yeah, I mean, I was sold. And so I bought the comic and I, you know, read it and I gave the movie a watch. And then probably within a year of that, I found out that I had the opportunity to work on the show. And so my Watchmen fandom all happened very quickly.
We're easily some Watchmen and women.
The cultural impact that Watchmen has had can't be ignored, right? A lot of the themes that we see arising in superhero films and superhero stories, contemporary superhero stories, are all sort of poached from Watchmen. First comic book to introduce the idea of making superheroes illegal. So, you know, you see that in The Incredibles. You see that in Captain America Civil War.
Oh, yeah. Dude, when I realized how much that The Incredibles had taken from Watchmen, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
No capes.
Yep, that is also the Watchmen did the no capes thing. They also experimented with sort of the lineage and camaraderie aspect of people who are mass vigilantes sort of knowing each other in real life as well. So right, Patrick, you said you'd only seen the movie. The ending of the book and the ending of the movie are different because Zack Snyder, who directed the Watchmen film, thought that the ending of the book would not play to a mainstream audience. They changed the ending of the movie to a sort of nuclear blast going off instead of the ending of the book, which is a giant
spoiler alert.
The ending of the Watchmen book involves a giant squid wreaking havoc on Manhattan, not Dr. Manhattan, just New York City, and killing 3 million people to successfully avert World War III under the seventh term of President Richard Nixon, who's president for seven terms because we won the Vietnam War, because Dr. Manhattan existed, and he went into Vietnam and disintegrated all of the Viet Cong and scared Vietnam into submission, making them the 51st state of the United States of America. So I think you can see where this is going. I think what Watchmen the book will be remembered for is the caliber of writing compared to every other comic book from that time. There's a reason why people say that it's good to the standard of regular books instead of comic books. It doesn't treat the reader like an idiot. It doesn't rely on visual gags to explain how someone is feeling. It relies a lot on narration. There's a great synergy between the dialogue and the visuals in the book. And I think that carrying into the show, that is the golden rule that Damon Lindelof wrote this show upon, is remaining true to the writing style of the book and remaining true to the idea of having unique visuals.
And I think this is a good moment just for me to mention, if anyone wants a further glimpse into Damon Lindelof's intent as he set forth to create this series, he made a great post on his Instagram account where he highlights and details his feelings and thoughts towards adapting this work. I think it's a great read that anyone who watches the show should take a look at.
I mean, the dude has just been chatting away since the series has ended about anything that he wants to either do with it, how he's been doing it. But these TV guys took this really cool book. It's just a good old fusion of stuff, man. It's the best way to say it. I don't know. As someone that doesn't know as much about the comics as y'all do, like just from a TV aspect, this thing was awesome. And I love what they were able to, I guess, like take from and then change.
Well, and the writing obviously shines, but the show is definitely up to par with HBO's quality of television programming. The production design is just incredible. They did an amazing job doing any of the visual effects that they needed to do for the show and just building the visual world that we get to look at. It's incredible.
At the book and at the show's raw center, they both are compilations of artists with unique visions, whether it be writing, drawing, music. It's all a grouping of these people who have unique visions and unique understandings of what makes a story compelling.
So that being said, what was the most compelling parts for each of y'all with this series that maybe wasn't hit on in the books, or maybe then finally got revealed that was from the books?
Personally, being someone who's very much gravitated towards the characters, I feel like with most reboots of series, the most compelling characters are fairly consistently the original characters that first drew you to the material. And I feel like that is consistent in this show. I think what they do with Hooded Justice, what they do with Dr. Manhattan, those are insanely gripping and you just can't escape them.
Everything with the Hooded Justice, that was what, the nostalgia episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was easily a standout. Like, that's, I'm already seeing that on like all the best of 2019 episode lists and stuff like that. But it was cool to, I guess, like read afterwards, like in the news stuff, who Hooded Justice was, and then how they were able to take the one thing that wasn't explained about him and make that entirely who he's about. Brilliant, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
My favorite part of this series also comes from episode 6. Because I didn't have that sort of background, I thought the show just did an incredible job explaining inherited trauma visually.
Sure.
It's a concept that I think has kind of newly been brought to the forefront of some media. And this show really just makes you think about it, makes you understand what that type of inherited trauma actually means and how a current generation could still be feeling that. And I also thought that the visual marker of Angela's mask being the opposite of her grandfather's, mm-hmm. She puts on a black mask and spray paints her face black while her grandfather is hiding his identity by painting around his eyes white. And they show the mirroring of their makeup application in different episodes. I just thought that type of juxtaposition in the show was such an incredible visual element to explain such a complex concept.
And that's further sort of verified by Angela's personal philosophy of the world being black and white, a stark contrast between black and white.
And I'm just floored by the use of the nostalgia pills as a means of telling the story and using that as a framing device. And it's just incredible storytelling at play.
It's definitely much more harrowing than Lube Man's trip down nostalgia lane.
Well, see, I think that's the brilliance of this show, though, is that, like, you have Lube Man turning into a meme, and then you have, in the same show, an episode that is so deeply moving that also ends up making the comic better in a way. It's achieving so many things at once. It's almost unfathomable that one person wrote this, and this is one person's vision.
Which, to give proper credit, Damon Lindelof obviously was the showrunner and head writer, but there was a writer's room, you know.
Okay, okay, it was a writing staff here.
He's really applauded that writing staff and for all they do, and it's a great team of writers, and they really knocked it out of the park, whether it be all the character buildup. What I really appreciated is how they explain how time works for Dr. Manhattan, and also I really appreciated just the general, like, love story that much more, and then how they connected all those, like, little time loops and moments as that episode ended. Like, at the end of that episode, honestly, I was like, oh, that's so nice, what?
And in a couple of Lindelof's interviews, he said, too, that, you know, if they wanted to do more episodes, they could have. But in order to keep the focus on Will, Angela, and Cal, a.k.a. Dr. Manhattan, and develop the familial love and romantic love stories that really exist within their characters and building up their backgrounds and that kind of thing, that they felt that this was the appropriate amount of time to spend with them in order to understand who they are and where they are in the world in relation to all of these other characters that we get to meet.
Absolutely. And not just that, but Damon also has said that the original comic was a limited run. A lot of comics just go on and on and on, whereas, you know, the original Watchmen was a set number of episodes, number of issues that told a very concise story with beginning, middle, and end. The show does the same thing. And if you continue to look at the parallels between the original comic and the show, I mean, your mind just explodes. It's incredible. Episode 8, God Walks Into a Bar, that episode.
Clever alone in episode title, by the way.
The title's fantastic. That's such an amazing homage to issue number 4 of the graphic novel, paralleling that storytelling. And then you have Tales of the Black Freighter paralleled with Adrian Veidt's journey back home from Europa. And they go through very similar arcs. And I mean, you have Dr. Manhattan with his love story and, like, how he found love with Angela. And, like, you see there are two points in Dr. Manhattan's life where he knows that he's going to die. And the first one kind of breaks his faith in humanity, because the love of his life leaves him as he's about to die and will not stay with him when that's all that he needs. But then he comes back as Dr. Manhattan. And then what happens when he knows he's about to die another time?
She stays with him.
She stays with him.
Oh, my gosh.
And wow.
It's just incredible parallels on every... It's so deep and intricate. It's unfathomable.
I actually bought the complete series of the Watchmen graphic novels for my brother for Christmas.
But also, you should just steal those really quick now. I'm sure you're much more of a fan of all this.
I am 100% going to steal them for a little while over the Christmas holidays.
Just put the gift on layaway. Be like, hey, this is yours after January 3rd. Let me just give me some time to peruse this really quick.
All right, I have to hold it in escrow for a little while.
Escrow, there you go. That's a big kid word.
Yeah, so the original run of Watchmen, it's 12 issues that came out over the course of 13 months because the final issue took an extra month to make. So Alex and I were discussing the cadence of the season, right? And, you know, you typically see seasons of television landing on an even number. This one had 9 episodes. 9 is an odd number to land your season on, which I feel almost rhymes with the cadence of the comic taking 13 months to make. I guess that just gives you a very brief window into the lengths that the show goes to rhyme with the comic book, but not imitate it. I think that was the key there. And I think that was also when, Alex, you mentioned Damon Lindelof's Instagram post, which you had told me about while you were working on the show, and I read it and it gave me goosebumps because he writes it in the style of the most poignant chapter of the Book of Watchmen, which is chapter 4. It's a narration of Dr. Manhattan. It's the time where Dr. Manhattan gets fed up with humanity and he flees to Mars for the first time. And he narrates his life before he became God, essentially. It's such a moving character piece. That's the big worry leading into the show is like, how are you going to top what seems like the gold medal of writing these interesting characters? And, you know, he passed with flying colors. You know what I mean? This guy's Usain Bolt. Alan Moore's Jesse Owens. This guy's Usain Bolt.
We even mentioned, like, the design of how HBO, like, put these, like, thumbnails up. Like, online, at least. Like, if you were watching on HBO Go or HBO Now, how, like, first off, all lines up. It's all aesthetically pleasing. You know, it's a grid of three. The other thing that they did, it's like, they just pick a thumbnail where you realize that every one of these episodes really is mostly character focused. You'll see other things and B plots going on, but you know, we all very much know that, like, what, episode 4 or something, it's all about Lady True, or episode 1, it's all about Angela.
And that is a Damon Lindelof special right there.
I mean, yeah, that reminds me of Lost. Yeah, totally.
And the other thing about those thumbnails that we were talking about is that they're all of a single character.
Yes.
Not only are these episodes and the story really about the characters and very focused on character development, but that these thumbnails, these like short visual representations of what the episode should be about, are these individual characters.
For sure. And then, you know, going back to my expertise about the comic and why it's so influential, they adopted a very unique template for the layout of the panels of the book. And can you guess how many panels on average are on one page of Watchmen?
Is it 9?
It's 9. It's crazy how the detail even goes along to the number of episodes they have and how it matches the 9-panel format of Watchmen, which, by the way, is very dense for a comic book, you could say. You open a comic book and sometimes it's like 3 panels a page and there's a giant punch happening. Watchmen really takes the time to meander on its characters and let them describe what is happening instead of visually showing it in many ways. And when they use full page panels, they're more poignant because of that condensed manner of how the pages are normally laid out.
Speaking of dense, this sounds like a dense production schedule to work at. What was it like working on this damn thing? This must be cool as shit, right?
It was so cool. I mean, every day was different, which on any production that you ever work on, it's going to be different. But like the level of production on this was fascinating. And I mean, the contents of this particular show are so varied that it was constantly engaging. And like I already said, I'm a massive Damon Lindelof fan all the way back from Lost. And so it was a massive pleasure to be able to work on a show of his. I was ecstatic when I got the news. There was one day particularly where I had an interaction with Damon. And so basically he was just getting to set for the day and we were in the middle of a rehearsal. And so I greeted him as he came onto the soundstage and I said, "Hey Damon, good morning, blah, 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 blah. We're in the middle of a rehearsal right now. It's right over this way at this set," and kind of leading him there. And, you know, he says, you know, "Thank you, blah, blah, blah," and kind of goes on his way. As he's leaving me to join the rehearsal, he turns back to me and he says, "Your name's Alex, isn't it?" And like, I'm, you know, completely gobsmacked by that question. And I'm, you know, I'm thinking like, Damon Lindelof knows my name. You know, I managed to get out a reply. I'm like, yeah, that's my name.
Don't wear it out, mister.
And he's like, "Thanks, Alex." And I'm like, "Thank you, Damon." And, you know, he goes and does his thing. You know, I'm just roaming around for the next 5 minutes on cloud 9. And the whole time I'm just kind of thinking like, how does he know my name?
He noticed
me. How does he know my name? That's either a very good thing or a very bad thing. How does he know my name? And that's when I look down at the walkie-talkie that's on my hip that has a massive piece of tape on it with my name in giant capital Sharpie letters. And I'm just like, "Alex, you doofus." I mean, it's just such a pleasure to kind of be in his presence and see him work, because I mean he's just so talented.
And speaking of talent, we had some talented music in this too, by the way.
Oh, dude.
The team that licensed the music for this show are awesome, but you can't ignore the original score by Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor, who have scored The Social Network.
Which, like, I think it certainly helps you when you kind of get your feet on the ground working for David Fincher. That'll help propel you.
Or you get your feet on the ground as the lead singer of Nine Inch Nails.
Well, you know, different worlds.
Different worlds, but I think Trent Reznor has really, like, revitalized his career. Not that it was gone to begin with, but this is a completely different side of this guy. And I honestly think, like, I'm not a big fan of Nine Inch Nails music. And I think that his talents are much better served doing stuff like this. I'm listening to the soundtrack in my car, like, every morning. And I guess I'm, you know, I'm a big fan of everything Watchmen, so I'm a little biased.
Yeah, when you listen to his scores, the talent is undeniable. You know, he's got the full package. They both have the full package. They're a duo.
Speaking of full packages, are we going to see Dr. Manhattan again?
Season 2, will they, won't they?
Do we smell more Dr. Manhattan?
I hope we don't smell it.
I hope, yeah.
I mean, at this point, it kind of feels like HBO is going to, like, right? Regardless of any creator's wishes.
I mean, so yeah, like, I hope HBO wants to, but Damon Lindelof keeps suggesting, oh yeah, we'd love to end it here. Like, this is the shot of Angela just walking on. She might be Dr. Manhattan. She might not be. That's the perfect ending. And just making it sound like it's all finalized. So I don't know. I would love for there to be more, but y'all talk about how they like to, like, close the stories and make it close-ended and not keep it going, you know?
I think that this is definitely a case that I could be happy either way. I absolutely love the story of this season. It's an entirety, and I would be okay if they decided not to make a second season, but I think continuing the story of Angela having these powers and seeing what she can do and who's after her next and further developing some of the characters that maybe we didn't completely get to explore and getting to meet new characters that arise from this shift in power would be really incredible.
Like, you could do a whole season on Tim Blake Nelson, honestly.
I think that in this season, we didn't get to see enough of Looking Glass. I think there's a lot more to dive into about Looking Glass.
Mm-hmm. Red Scare, too.
And Red Scare and Pirate Jenny.
Yeah, Pirate Jenny.
But Alex, you and I had a little bit of a conversation after watching the finale about where they could go with this. And I think you definitely presented some interesting concepts, but you definitely prefaced that you don't know anything about what's to come with this show at all.
Yeah. I mean, who does know? I mean, maybe Damon, but maybe not. I feel like it would be fun to see some other things, like a Dan Dreiberg jailbreak or an Ozymandias actual trial, but who knows?
All stuff that could happen, because, yeah, our gal Jean Smart took him away. We sadly won't see any more of Lady True, because she was pretty cool, too. I don't say it was like her story was like slapped together. Like, it all came together, I guess, and she was like a real supervillain.
I don't know. I see a real cliffhanger being Bjorn grown up in the second season, and discovering Ozymandias's hideout and finding her way into his personal sperm bank and starting the cycle of Lady True over again. I think that maybe that's why Lady True had her cloned to begin with.
Oh my gosh, of Lady True's mom, who is a clone herself?
Yeah, Lady True 0.0. I could see that as either being the way that they kick off the season or the way that they end season 2.
Oh, that'd be wild.
That would certainly stir up a decent bit of events.
That'd be funky. The other thing is, yes, Jean Smart did take away our boy Adrian Veidt, but will he actually face any consequences? Will he actually, you know, receive any prison time? Like, that whole thing, it's a massive government conspiracy at this point that goes all the way to the top, all the way to the multi-term Robert Redford. Could that whole thing be swept under the rug?
Or it's all Chasen Dale Petey, who is, as confirmed by the Petypedia article that we touched upon, is Lube Man.
I definitely want to see a Lube Man episode, though.
I would love that.
Also, Ozymandias Night Owl cellmates.
Oh
yeah, because, well, Night Owl in owl form is in Laurie Blake's apartment still, to our knowledge.
Well, they didn't confirm that They just show that she has a random owl in her place. They do say that they'll let her owl out of its cage if she succeeds going on this mission to Tulsa, which I guess is sort of a indication that the owl at her place could be...
I mean, with the fact that Adrian Veidt was the statue, it's certainly plausible, I think, in the world of HBO's Watchmen.
Yes, sir.
That Dan Dreiberg is a physical owl in Laurie Blake's apartment.
Like they've turned him into an owl a la The Lobster.
and he's played by Colin Farrell as well.
Yeah. Sad boy Colin Farrell.
That'd be an okay casting. I'd be all right with that.
Colin Farrell is Dan Dreiberg. Hell to the yeah. HBO, you owe my boy Colin Farrell for making him be in True Detective Season 2.
Hey, he got to drink a lot of Modelo. That's all he wanted from this. He's like, I got all the money. You know what I love? Modelo. Give me some now.
Well, you know what I love? 5-star reviews from y'all. So if you can review us wherever you listen to our podcast, give us a review. Tell us your theories about Watchmen. We'd love to hear them.
We've extended our reach out into the world of social media. It's a really scary place. It's very scary, full of people who get very angry. We like to have joy, and we like to have nostalgia over on our social media. So you can follow us at Son of a Ginger Podcast on Instagram. Until then, I've been Mason Rorschach Tess Moreau.
I've been Alex.
I've been truly Beth Marcinko.
And I'm Patrick Slippity-Dip-Dip-Dip-Baylor. And Looby-Dooby-Doo!